So this talk is about a system that adds verifiability to real-world services without compromising their privacy. By verifiability, I actually mean something very different from the first three talks in this session. In particular, software verification is concerned with verifying whether a program meets a desired specification. Whereas proving correct executions is concerned with proving that a specific program was executed correctly. To further clarify this distinction, I'm going to use a motivating example. Consider a cloud-hosted wallet service such as Square or WeChat Pay. This service maintains balances on behalf of its clients and then exposes various APIs to transfer money from one account to another account. Suppose this service wants to prove that it's operating correctly. A naive approach is to employ record and replay. That is, we can record all the requests at the service and then replay them at a verifier. Unfortunately, there are multiple issues with record and replay. First, it sacrifices privacy because it exposes all the requests to a verifier, including the internal state. As a result, a verifier can learn sensitive details of the service's state, for example, account balances of various users. Second, verification is expensive because verifiers have to re-execute all the requests. Furthermore, they must also obtain a complete trace of all the requests and also potentially hints from the service to re-execute. As a result, this can introduce high network costs. Verifiable state machines is a powerful primitive that can address both of these problems. In particular, a verifiable state machine produces cryptographic proofs that can be checked by a verifier. These proofs have three special properties. First, these proofs are zero knowledge, which means that they do not reveal anything about the requests, responses, or the internal state of the service to a verifier. Second, these proofs are succinct, which means that each proof is small, for example, a few hundred bytes. And verifying a proof is also inexpensive. For example, it takes about a few milliseconds of CPU time to verify a single proof. Finally, because these are proofs, if the server makes some mistakes, either benignly or maliciously, verifier's output reject, except for a very small probability. There is a lot of prior work that implements verifiable state machines, including a system that appeared at SOSP a few years back. The theory that underpins these systems dates back to early 90s. Unfortunately, the theory was too expensive to be implemented. Fortunately, there is a series of systems that reduce the cost of this theory by over 20 orders of magnitude. And these latter systems extend the earlier systems with a notion of storage. For example, they support a key value store within the programming model. Unfortunately, despite this massive progress, all of these systems suffer from two major limitations. First, producing proofs about stateful computations or in particular storage operations is computationally expensive. For instance, it takes about several seconds to even minutes of CPU time for each storage operation in the computation. Second, they can only produce proofs about sequential executions. In other words, they cannot execute a batch of requests and then produce a proof that they followed some correct concurrency control mechanism. Because of these two limitations, all the prior systems can only support very low throughput even for simple services. Our system, which is called SPICE, addresses those problems with new techniques. First, it features a new storage primitive that is orders of magnitude more efficient than prior storage primitives. Second, it supports concurrent request execution with transactional semantics. Third, it includes a compiler that automatically transforms services expressed in a high-level language into two executables, one for the service and another one for the verifier. The service executable processes requests and then produces proofs, and then the verifier executable consumes those proofs and checks them. We use this toolchain to build three applications, which includes a wallet service and a distributed payment network. For these applications, SPICE supports up to 1,000 requests per second. And this represents 4 to 5 orders of magnitude improvement over prior state of the art. The rest of this talk is in 3 parts. First, I'll provide background on a prior system called Pantry, which we build on. Next, I'll provide an overview of our system Spice. Finally, I'll present a few experimental results. Under Pantry, a programmer expresses a service using a subset of C augmented with storage interfaces. The subset of C supported by Pantry contains many standard C constructs, such as loops, conditionals, even volatile memory with pointers. Pantry storage interfaces include standard key value store operations such as a get and a put. I'll first discuss how Pantry handles this subset of C, and then I'll discuss how Pantry supports a key value store. At a very high level, Pantry operates in 2 stages. First, it translates a C program into a low-level mathematical model of computation called constraints. This translation preserves the property that the constraints are satisfiable if and only if the program is executed correctly. So a naive approach to prove satisfiability of a set of constraints is for the service to just hand the verifier the satisfying assignment to these constraints. Unfortunately, this is roughly equivalent to record and replay, but in a low-level mathematical model of computation. As a result, it does not provide privacy nor succinctness. To address this problem, Pantry employs an argument protocol, which is a cryptographic primitive. In particular, the argument protocol enables the service to succinctly prove that the service knows a satisfying assignment without revealing anything about the assignment itself. As a result, it provides both succinctness and zero-knowledge properties. Now that I've discussed how Pantry handles this subset of C, I'll now describe how it handles storage operations. And I'm going to start with a simple straw man. Suppose that we let the service maintain its state in a key value store, and whenever the C program executes a get, the service supplies the corresponding value. And then we take this program and then prove the correct execution of this program by using an argument protocol. Unfortunately, this does not work because the service is untrusted, so it can support any value as for the get call. And it could include even an incorrect value. So even if you produce a proof of correct execution, it's not very useful because the program was executed with incorrect state. So to avoid this, Pantry employs Merkle trees. In particular, the service stores all the key value pairs in a Merkle tree. Now suppose a C program issues a get operation on a key. The service can actually respond with a set of nodes in the tree that enables the C program to reconstruct the root of the Merkle tree. It can then check if the reconstructed root equals the root that was supplied as an input to the function. Note that this check passes only if the response to the get was correct. Pantry then executes the C program, including the Merkle checks in the constraints formalism, and then it produces a succinct zero-knowledge proof using an argument protocol. So there are 2 issues with using Merkle trees for building key-value stores. First, the cost of a put or a get is logarithmic in the size of the state, because reconstructing the root of a Merkle tree incurs cost logarithmic in the size of the state. Second, the root of the tree is also a point of contention. As a result, the storage primitive can only support sequential executions and also a single writer. In the next part of this talk, I'll discuss how Spice addresses both problems. At a very high level, Spice's API for expressing a service is very similar to Pantry's. It supports the same subset of C and uses the same machinery to compile C programs and execute them to produce a succinct zero-knowledge proof. The primary difference is in how it handles storage operations. So instead of a Merkle tree, Spice uses a storage primitive that is based on set data structures. I'm going to briefly describe how this set-based storage works with an example. Under the set-based storage, the state is composed of two sets, a read set and a write set. At the initialization, both the sets are empty. Suppose we want to execute an insert operation. It adds this key value pair along with some monotonically increasing timestamp to the write set. Now suppose we want to execute a get operation on the key that we just inserted. And suppose the service behaves correctly and returns the correct value along with the correct timestamp. So we add the return value to the read set and then write back in the same value with an updated timestamp to the write set. The reason we do this is because it maintains a key invariant, which is that when the service behaves correctly, read set is a subset of the write set. To illustrate this, suppose the get operation did not return the correct value. It returned some incorrect value w, which is not equal to v. The incorrect value gets added to the read set, and the same value gets added to the write set along with some updated timestamp counter. One thing that you can observe here is that the read set is no longer a subset of the write set. And in fact, this happens every time the service misbehaves with storage operations. Unfortunately, the C program cannot directly operate on these sets because these sets are managed by the service and the service is completely untrusted. Instead, SPICE uses a particular type of hash function called set hash functions. So this set hash function has a special property, which is that it can be computed incrementally. For example, if you have a set that has two elements, you can first compute a set hash of one element set, and then you can combine the hashes to get a hash of the two element set. In essence, a struct that contains two set hashes is logically equivalent to the root of the Merkle tree. There are actually many details, but I wanted to highlight a few key takeaways from the set-based storage. First, a get and a put add an element each to the read set and the write set. So the cost of a put and a get is a constant instead of logarithmic in the size of the state. Second, the service periodically produces a proof that the read set is a subset of the write set. This cost is linear in the size of the state, but it can be amortized over a batch of requests. Finally, non-conflicting operations on sets commute, so it can support multiple writers and hence concurrent request processing. In fact, we built mutual exclusion primitives on top of the set-based primitive. We then built a library that executes simple transactions that guarantee serializability. We then built three applications on top of this library. In the next part of this talk, I'm going to present a few experimental results. In particular, I'll answer two questions. First, how does SPICE compare with the prior work? Second, what is the end-to-end performance of applications built with SPICE? To answer the first question, we preload the service's state with a million key-value pairs. We then run a micro-benchmark that executes a sequence of get and put operations on this state. The metric here is the number of operations executed per second along with proofs. Here's a table that compares SPICE's performance with prior work. There are two things to note here. First, SPICE achieves over an order of magnitude higher throughput even on a single CPU core. Second, when SPICE executes requests concurrently, it achieves 4 to 5 orders of magnitude higher throughput than prior work. So to answer the second question, we experiment with the three applications that we built, and we also experiment with the varying number of CPU cores. On the x-axis, we depict various request types supported by our applications. For example, the credit debit or the request type supported by our distributed payment network. And on the y-axis, we depict the number of requests processed by the service. As we can see, the SPICE achieves a near linear increase in throughput as it gets more CPU resources. And the throughput it achieves with 512 CPU cores is 4 to 5 orders of magnitude better than prior work. I did not depict the verification throughput, but it's more than 1,000 proof verifications per second, even on 4 CPU cores. Before I summarize, I want to mention a few limitations of SPICE. First, the CPU cost to produce proofs remains large, especially when we compare the cost of producing a proof with an execution that does not produce proofs. Second, SPICE amortizes the cost of producing the subset proof over a batch of requests. This introduces latency for producing proofs. In our experiments, this is about 7.5 minutes. What this means is that after a request gets executed, the service produces a proof after about 7.5 minutes. To summarize this talk, verifiable state machines is a powerful tool for adding verifiability to services without compromising their privacy. SPICE represents a substantial progress towards efficiently implementing verifiable state machines. Finally, we predict that SPICE or a variant of it will be a key tool in building secure systems in the near future. With that, I can take questions.
Hi, Ming Kai from Shanghai Jiao Tong University. Nice talk. So I have a question. In your verifier, you need to ensure that the reset is a subset of the write set, right? So what if the key value store returns an old value? Can that be detected?
Yes, it does detect stale reads. So the verifier actually does not do the check. It just verifies the proof. The server produces a proof that the read set is a subset of the write set. And in the paper, we show how this also handles stale, like get returning a stale value.
Okay, thank
you. Yes, yeah, so one of my questions is, it looks like the one cost that's troublesome is that the read and write costs are proportional to how many read and writes have occurred ever in the past. So is that cost growing without bound?
No, actually, the cost of a read and a write is only a constant because it operates on these digests. So whenever there's a read or a write operation, you just add an element to the set, but you add it to the digest.
But is the pool of operations in that set is growing without bound? Is there some operation that is there some computation that's getting more expensive, like at the server side there?
Yeah, so the server side, it has to produce this proof that the read set is a subset of the write set. And that proof actually takes time linear in just the size of the current state, the number of key value pairs. It does not grow with the size of the sets because of how we use the set hashes. So it's bounded by the size of the state.
And did you change anything about the computational model, or was it just a change to the, like, you know, from the prior work, there's sort of this framework for reasoning about the circuit or the constraint system. Is all of that basically the same, and the main changes are in the storage model?
Yes. There are no changes to the underlying crypto. It's all implemented on top of as a library, so it's completely pluggable. You could incorporate a new cryptographic protocol.
Great. Very cool. And I guess we got another question.
Yeah, Zhong Shao from Yale University. So I have a question about this subset relationship. Is it possible to read a value that you write earlier, but not your last write, and still satisfy the subset relationship?
No, actually, we do. It depends. For example, if it's within a single thread, it guarantees sequential consistency, so you will read your own writes.
Right. I was just asking because you periodically check a subset relationship, right? You might return a value that's not. You know, you might maliciously returning a value not from your last write, but from several writes earlier, and would this be detected?
Yes, it's almost equivalent to returning an older value, I think, right? Like you're asking whether if the program returns an older value, does it get detected? Yes, it does get detected because every read is a read followed by a write because it reads the value and then adds something to the write set.
Okay.
And if ever there was a value that was an older value that was written, then this subset relationship won't hold.
So it's probably stronger than subset. It's more like ordered prefix.
Yes. So the check that we do is a subset check, but the actual consistency semantics that we provide is sequential consistency.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Jeanette.